Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this snowy Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everyone is being careful out there discussing the Titans and all things NFL right now. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in Joel Corey, former NFL agent now with CBS Sports to the program. Joel, appreciate you taking time to join us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Joel, obviously J.J. Watt now out there and available, a free agent from Houston. Him and the Texans part ways after he has been the franchise player there for so long. And the Titans have been linked to that. There's a lot of lists talking about, you know, the Titans need pass rushers, and J.J. Watt has some familiarity with Mike Vrabel. Number one, what do you think J.J. Watt has left in the tank, and what do you think his value is out there on the open market?
Well, I don't think Tennessee's a great fit for him, even though the familiarity for the defense, just because at this point you don't want him being the anchor on the defensive line. To me, Cleveland makes more sense, or either Green Bay, because you got Za'Darius Smith in Green Bay, and you've got Myles Garrett, who's going to command a lot of attention in Cleveland. Now, in terms of contractually, J.J. was supposed to make $17.5 million this year had he stayed in Houston. I don't think the deal he signs will average that much. I'd look it to a deal that was signed last year by a guy who's 31 years old, Jason Pierre-Paul. $25 million over 2 years. Max is 27 with incentives. So that may be more of the range. Obviously, that could change if you have multiple teams pursuing you. And then Tom Condon, J.J. Watt's agent, who is based in Nashville, could leverage the teams against each other for more money. J.J. also is going to eliminate teams which are in the Houston position, which don't have a chance to win, so that could narrow his market as well.
So it sounds, Joel, like, you know, certainly he's going to be well into eight figures a year, whatever the term of the deal is in your mind.
Yeah, I think he's still going to be an eight-figure guy.
Do you think that he's
– he doesn't have a ton of cap room as it is right now. Obviously, you can create it, but right now, and that's the problem for a lot of teams, everyone's in a holding pattern until they know exactly where the cap is going to be set. It's hard to really do much of anything outside of cutting guys until you know where the cap will be set, which may be a lot later than it is in normal years.
Do you think that that's – I mean, obviously, guys go in the open market, they get paid. In a lot of cases, they probably get maybe paid more, you know, than maybe their quote-unquote values at this point. But I look at J.J. Watt, and I think he's like a $7, $8 million a year player maybe. But I don't know. Am I way off here?
Well, he can still put pressure on the quarterback. One thing you got to remember in Houston, he had no help last year on that line. Whitney Merciless. Yeah. And rush the passer. So it's basically J.J. and nobody. So you can just load up on J.J., neutralize him, and nobody else is really doing anything. If he was the J.J. of old, one, they wouldn't have cut him. And two, he could have handled the double teams and that type of attention better. That's why I think for his career at this point in time, you look at who else is on that line. That's why to me, Cleveland, they actually are good now for a change. They've got cap space, and they got a guy that's a load to deal with, Myles Garrett. So to me, that's more of a place to go. Even Buffalo, I think he's got to be the guy in Buffalo because they had Jerry Hughes. So I would rank Cleveland ahead of Buffalo, even though Buffalo went advanced to a different level in the playoffs than the Browns did.
Joel Corey, former NFL agent, now with CBS Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Joel, I want to stick with the pass rushing theme for a minute. What do you think the future looks like for Von Miller in Denver? Obviously, an injury this past season that he never really got going, never really played this past season for the Broncos. What do you think that looks like for Von Miller, and do you think he's in Denver next year?
I call it a 50-50 proposition he's in Denver. His last year that he played, 2019, was a down year by his standards. He had 8 sacks, and I think he had like 60 to 65 quarterback pressures. That's not Von Miller. And then he misses all of last year with an ankle injury. So if they're going to keep him, the option they have to exercise is worth $18 million. $7 million is guaranteed if they exercise it. I think they're kind of going to explore what makes sense on an extension, trying to get him redone to lower the cap hit, which is $22.125 million, and also a more appropriate salary for him at this stage in his career because he's also 31.
So, Joel, the Titans are in a tough spot here with Isaiah Wilson, the first-round pick out of Georgia, offensive tackle last year, who, of course, you know, made no impact on the team, is on the NFI list now. John Robinson kind of had some, you know, I would say some strong words, basically saying, like, it's on him, you know, to figure out if he wants to play and things like that. It doesn't sound like – I mean, he said they haven't talked, so it doesn't sound promising right now. Obviously – if you're the Titans at this point, you're taking a bath to some extent, you know, if you move on from Isaiah Wilson. But I know there are different outcomes here. Can you break that down for us, like what the Titans' recourse would be at this point, and I guess what would be the best-case scenario for them if they were to decide to move on from Isaiah Wilson?
Well, one, teams don't like to admit they made a mistake with a first-round pick after 1 year. You usually give him a little more rope to hang himself or figure it out, so to speak. That may not have been the best analogy to use. But in most cases, when you are suspended, whether it's by the league or by the club, the language for your guarantees means that they're going to void because that's considered a default or a breach. So the one-game suspension that he served last season may have voided the guarantees, which would make it easier to get rid of him. Now, what you would probably do is bring him in to, if there's a somewhat of a regular offseason, traditional one, and then to camp, and if you see that he still is clueless, then you could cut him. If the guarantees have voided, then you don't have to pay him basically almost $5 million from 2021 to 2023, the remaining years of his contract, because that's no longer an obligation. It's now unsecured money. And if you wait till it's after June 1, which you'd cut him presumably after he comes to training camp, if it came to that, then you actually are picking up cap space because the bonus proration from 2022 and 2023 would not hit the cap immediately. So you would actually be taking his base salary off the cap of $1.13 million. That's what you pick up in cap room. And then next year, you'd have almost $3 million in dead money from the signing bonus, the last 2 years of proration from the signing bonus. And I'd have to look at the actual contract, but in most contracts, if you get suspended, then the guarantee is void.
Wow, so a one-game suspension, is that pretty cut and dried, or is that something that would be, you know,
well, it depends
contested
on the actual language. The language sometimes is usually written that if you refuse to play, practice, or perform services, or if you're suspended by the club, sometimes it states conduct detrimental, sometimes it doesn't. Then it's like for any league policy, which would be personal conduct, substance abuse, or performance-enhancing drugs policy. So it all depends on the precise language. If the one-game suspension did void, if it was a conduct detrimental suspension and they didn't suspend the first time for the COVID-19 violations, and normally if you're going to go conduct detrimental, there has to be graduated punishment. So that may have been why they didn't do it the first time, because they were laying the foundation for a future suspension which would hold up for the guarantees, because they'd already seen that he was very immature. So I think I'd have to look at the actual length of the contract. There's a chance that those guarantees are gone.
Yeah, well, that was my next question. I can't help but think then that, you know, the one-game suspension was more than just to punish him at the time, right? I mean, potentially with the long-term possibility that this was just going to go badly in mind, right?
Well, he was having issues from basically the time he got there. He's at a party at Tennessee State when he's not supposed to be. So from day one, he hasn't been professional, so to speak. He's been one of the most unprofessional players I can recall in a long time, at least from the stuff which comes out publicly. And I don't care if you're 21, 22, 20 years old, you usually are a lot more professional than he's been.
Joel, yeah. Last thing for you here. Obviously, you know, the Titans have a decision to make with Corey Davis coming up, and you know, he's a fifth overall pick, had his best season this past year, 65 catches, almost 1,000 yards, 5 touchdowns on the season. What do you think Corey Davis's market value could look like if he hits free agency and is able to go and test the waters out there this year around the league?
He probably prices himself out of Nashville. You got three guys who are going to be commanding top dollar if they're free and not franchised. Chris Godwin, Allen Robinson, Kenny Golladay. For teams that don't want to go in that stratosphere, Will Fuller, Corey Davis, Juju Smith-Schuster may be guys that you look at. So as long as he's not thinking he should be paid like those guys, he has a chance to potentially get somewhere between, at most, number two money and where Cooper Kupp is, which is like $15 million. Number two money is anywhere from $10 to $12 million. So he's going to be a double-figure guy, I would think, and maybe the Ravens, because at least from a mentality standpoint, he fit. He's coming from a run-oriented system. They don't really throw the ball that much. It's basically a run-oriented system. So he could make that transition, and there wouldn't be the diva problems you have with some receivers when they're not getting the football.
Joel Corey, former NFL agent, now with CBS Sports, has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro. Joel, great stuff, man. We appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That very interesting stuff there from Joel Corey. Joel, what we'll do is we'll come back. We'll react to the Isaiah Wilson stuff that he threw out there. Also, Corey Davis as well. And take your reaction on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 1025, The Game. .1025 The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer. And who doesn't love free beer? So make sure you're tuning in all day Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Joel Corey for joining us in the last segment, former NFL agent now with CBS Sports. And Joe, some very interesting stuff thrown out there from Joel Corey, especially regarding Isaiah Wilson. And you asked him about, you know, just where it stands right now with Isaiah Wilson and what sort of bath the Titans would be taking if they decided to move on from him. And Joel Corey making it sound like, you know, the one-game suspension last season that Isaiah Wilson served could void some future guaranteed money that he would have, making it, I guess, less painful if you're the Titans to move on. Some very, very interesting stuff, very interesting comments that, quite frankly, I hadn't even thought about from the Titans' vantage point when it comes to Isaiah Wilson.
Yeah, so like he said, there's specific language to deal with in the contract, and that's one of those things that I wouldn't expect to just, you know, go down without a fight if it got to that. But maybe it could be less painful for them, less of a hit, less of a drag. Not only just less of a cost, but less of a drag on the cap if they did move on. I mean, I think Joel's first point that he said still stands, which is teams don't like to admit that they completely botched a first-round pick, especially this early. But then again, that suspension does seem to play into the idea of being poised to move on, and the stuff John Robinson said this week certainly does not make me think like any less that they are, you know, that they're considering it. So I think Joel's exactly right. It's like, let's see how he comes in, how he conducts himself, how he plays, how he interacts with people. But it may not be all that long if the Titans don't see and hear what they want to see.
And Joel Corey also saying that, you know, Corey Davis may price himself out of Nashville. And it was interesting to hear John Robinson talk about Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith. And basically, as we talked about yesterday with Steve Lehman, you know, really compare it to Jack Conklin in that situation of, hey, you know, we're going to pursue you. We're going to be competitive. But it may come down to a place where you've got to make a decision on whether or not you want to be here. Joel Corey there talks about, you know, Corey Davis making number two receiver money you know, anywhere from, you know, $10 to $12 million, maybe as much as 15, with, you know, that kind of lines up with some reports I've seen as well. What did you think of those numbers and those figures for Corey Davis as we look ahead to free agency here?
Yeah, it seems like it's just like, I mean the J.J. Watt numbers he's throwing out there. All it takes is one. All it takes is one team to want to pay that much, and there's probably going to be at least one. So, you know, if that's the case, I don't see him back here. And, you know, when you talk about the comparison to Jack Conklin, of course, then my answer is, well, let's remember that and how because Conklin got away, you drafted Isaiah Wilson. Yeah. So sometimes it's good to keep your players if you can keep them. It may strap you and you can't do something else that you want to do. But gosh, it all not like had they signed Conklin and they've been able to figure that out last year, not only would they not have drafted Isaiah Wilson, they may not have had the money to go after Jadeveon Clowney. Think of how much better things could be for this team right now, had they done that. So maybe you don't want to make that, you know, you don't want to go that route again, but I also can't sit here and say you got to pay Corey Davis $17 million a year to stay. I mean, that's, you know, he's a really good player, and it would be a big loss, but that's overpaying a player if it gets into that neighborhood.
Well, it is, and he talked about, you know, the Ravens potentially being a fit, and like the Ravens are approaching Kansas City Chiefs territory with me. Like, does the salary cap apply to the Ravens at this point?
No, I it's amazing. I mean, even last year, like when they like, yeah, we'll pick up Ngakoue now too. Why not? You know, Clayus Campbell, let's go. Here we go, everybody. Yeah, it's amazing. Again, this is where it's, you know, one of these universal truths in the NFL is we talk about the cap all the time. The cap is real, but the cap can be manipulated. You know, the cap can be overcome, at least to some extent. And then you'll see teams get like the Eagles are now, when it all comes back to bite you and all those years of like paying the minimum on your credit card bill. And now everything's coming due and you're hosed. So that's the other side of it.
And then the topic that we've been talking about for the past week that I thought was really interesting. And, you know, you mentioned the salary cap. I think Joel's right. Teams are in a holding pattern and kind of waiting to see what the salary cap is actually going to look like. But it looks like from the reports out there and from what we just heard from Joel Corey, that J.J. Watt, I mean, he's going to be an 8-figure player. Like he's going to be paid, you know, in the double-digit millions per year, which, you know, we've talked about the prices that we'd be comfortable going to for J.J. Watt if we're the Titans. And I think Joel also brings up a good point of, you know, if he comes here, based on the way this defense is currently constructed, I mean, he's going to have to be the guy because especially if he's commanding that type of price tag, I mean, you're not going to be able to go sign another big-name pass rusher alongside J.J. Watt and still – you know, keep your offense where you want to keep it, somewhat intact, whether that's with Corey Davis or with Jonnu Smith as well. So the more people talk, the less likely I think it is that J.J. Watt ends up here in Nashville. I didn't think it was overly likely to begin with, but I think it's growing less and less likely by the day.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've been out on the idea anyway, even at a mid-level price, because I think you cost yourself going after someone else. But if it's this – you can't even go get like a depth guy, you know, if you sign him for this much money. I mean, I'm completely 100% on it. I want it on the record. I want Jared to know that too. I was completely all in on they should sign Clowney, and I'm all out on Watt. And I think Joel made a good point there too, Joel Corey last segment, about Watt looking at this and needing – you know, needing a real difference maker to help him out. You know, I mean, look, that's true. I mean, probably across the league. If you're the only focus of a – like if you're Aaron Donald, okay, then fine. You can just rip up triple teams. But, right. You know, like for the most part – and that was J.J. Watt too. That's what he used to be. That's not him. But I think that's fair too, like I said. Like I asked you yesterday, do you remember J.J. Watt in the Titans game when the Titans went up and down the field? Like, did he do anything in that game? You know, to Joel's point, when you don't have help and that defense was so bad all around him, then it is easier to focus on him. And I don't remember how much like the Titans doubled him in that game or how much teams doubled him this year. But I think, you know, in a good situation, I could see him still being an impactful player, but he's just not JJ Watt. Then I think some Titans fans who are clamoring for him seem to think he's 2015 JJ Watt, and that JJ Watt is not coming back.
Joe, there is some noise right now surrounding Von Miller in Denver and maybe what his future looks like there. And Joel kind of broke down the numbers of, you know, salary cap wise, what the Broncos are looking at if they keep him on his current contract. If they move on from him and he becomes a free agent or they decide to trade him or whatever the case may be, how does that change the market when it comes to pass rushers this upcoming offseason?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and this is one of those situations where, you know, there's a criminal investigation going on with him too.
Yep.
Involving his pregnant girlfriend. She did put out a statement that there was the domestic violence talk. She said that that's false. So I mean, there's a lot to figure out there, but that is a red flag. It's also, I mean, in this league, I mean, we just watched Antonio Brown win a ring. So I mean, let's be real about this league too. I mean, ultimately, I feel like, you know, if people are confident that he's all healthy and what is he, 31? He's 31 years old.
Yep.
I mean, you're talking about someone who, I mean, to me, you know, like for example, you compare him to Watt, they're not all that different in age. But I would say, you know, Von Miller is a guy who, although he went down to 8 sacks in 2019, played 15 games, I'd say he's probably closer to his prime and to a guy who can come in and really give you a big number than Watt is at this point. I mean, he's had, you know, the year before, and he was 14 and a half sacks in 2018. So, that would certainly change things, and that would certainly alter the market.
Coming up next, we'll get into the Nashville Predators taking on the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight at 6 o'clock. Pregame here on ESPN 102.5. The game at 5 o'clock. Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote joins us next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5. The game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5. The game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Looking ahead to the game tonight for the Nashville Predators taking on the Columbus Blue Jackets. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote. Dan, thanks for taking time to join us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
So, Dan, what's it been like trying to navigate through this week? Obviously, you know, you're at the arena on Monday. The game ends up being postponed. You don't play Tuesday and leave early for Columbus. What's it been like as a staff trying to navigate through what has to be, you know, one of the most unique weeks we've ever seen with the Predators?
Yeah, we were commenting on that last night about how we've never been this far along in a road trip and still neutral in emotion. Usually, you know, you're happier or upset, but, yeah, it's been par for the course of this season. And, you know, having, you know, when we mentioned this also, like having, you know, Brandon Walker, manning the ship during times like these, it really helps to have a guy that's been around for as long as he has and knows what he knows, because if not, you know, there could have been a bunch of logistical issues that there weren't because of him. So you know, it's been that kind of season, I think, for the boys and the coaching staff. So this, it just was kind of like, well, yeah, no, of course the games are going to get canceled. So, you know, the guys have been pretty resilient in that regard, and, you know, credit to them and credit to our staff, to the other staff and our emotional staff to keeping the boys together.
So, Dan, how does the coaching staff adjust then to a situation like this where all of a sudden, you know, you had two games that are off the board, you have, you know, this extra time away from home? Like, is it more film, more video, more talk, or do you not try to overload the guys? How do you handle that?
Yeah, it's a little mix of both. I mean, it's an opportunity, you know, like for us, it's an opportunity. There's always things you need to fix in your game. And, you know, there's individual meetings that you maybe didn't have time for, now you do. Little tweaks to your systematic play that again, this season doesn't seem to have time for a whole lot of change. So, you know, the blessing in disguise is you get bumps and bruises from our from our recent games that get healed up. And, you know, there's little pieces of our game that we can fix. Also, you know, just having the boys spend some time together without the pressure of having to play every single day. So, you know, there's some added benefits to it.
Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And, Dan, you know, over the last week or so, Ryan Ellis has voiced some frustration on what he's seen in the offensive zone. We had Matt Duchene on with us yesterday and talked about, you know, what he's seeing in the offensive zone right now, maybe guys being a little bit too robotic. What do you see right now offensively, and how does this team get to a place where they can contribute and start to score on a more consistent basis?
Well, I think, you know, we addressed this in practice yesterday. I think we're a little bit disconnected because we don't fully trust in each other to do our individual jobs quite yet, because we have a bunch of new guys. You know, this isn't something that just happens overnight where I know, you know, player X, he's going into the forecheck. He always stops the puck. You know, they don't have that built-in archive of knowledge of each other yet. And so, you know, we're at this point in the season where we have to start to trust each other that we're going to do our jobs. And then you're not thinking out there and you're not reacting. You get to be a little bit more pro-reactive that way, because that makes us a little bit slower if we're having to think and read instead of just know. And so now I think we're getting to the point where we trust each other enough to finish our routes, to know that that guy's going to do his job. And then that'll allow us to play faster, and the faster you play, the better chances you have in the offense. So,
and then adding on to that, Daniel, we had Matt Duchene on yesterday, and he talked a little bit about I'm trying to think of the word, because I use the word, you know, freelancing, but he said that's not exactly it, but just sort of he used the term, you know, play the game rather than work the game, which to me kind of sounds like, you know, I guess maybe be a little bit less robotic and a little bit more free flowing and kind of let it rip. But I don't, you know, how would you interpret that, and how does that work within, you know, your system?
Well, I think, you know, the system in the offensive zone, you know, is only robotic to get the puck back. You know, that you fill certain lanes, you reload above for a reason. Every puck usually goes through certain areas on the breakout. So you design a forecheck to get the puck back based on that. And then we get the puck back. Now you have the room to be creative. It's not like we're robotic and, okay, well, we have the puck, we need to do X, Y, and Z now. Like we've given the blank canvas to our offensive zone. You know, obviously we've given them methods to get out of trouble, which is the rim release, which I'm sure you've seen, you know, and that activates our D and so on. So it's not, you know, it's not like we're robotic in system play. I think sometimes we use our get out of jail free card of rim releasing instead of maybe protecting the puck a little bit more and maybe creating that way. So I think, you know, we've kind of focused on that this week, where guys aren't just giving up the puck for no reason, and then allow, you know, our shots and our speed to break down the other team, and then use our skill from there. So hopefully, like I said, you know, the systematic part of getting the puck back, you know, can seem robotic, but once we get the puck is when we can be more creative.
Dan, a guy that's been pretty consistently amazing so far this season has been Philip Forsberg, and just the different things he's able to do out there offensively. And really, I think this game, all over the ice, playing a 200-foot game. What have you seen from Forsberg in that regard, and why do you think he's been able to be so consistent so far this season?
Well, he's a monster. Right, he has all the tools. He can skate. He can beat you one on one. He can beat you wide. He can beat you with his shot, and then he can run you in the corners. Sounds a little bit like a Forsberg I used to know, but he's. I think it's when he works away from the puck, he's almost impossible to keep off the board, and that's what he's done. When he's had success, he's been working away from the puck, and then the puck seems to find guys like him. You know, they have that puck luck, as you will. But really, it just means that they're smarter than most of the other players because they know where to go and they always seem to be there at the right time. And that's what he has. So, you know, when he's full go, he's almost impossible to stop. I just don't. I don't envy the opposing team's defense when he's in one. So his work ethic, you know, away from the puck, to me is the biggest factor to his consistency.
Well, I'm gonna go back to DeShane, Dan, because you know obviously I thought he was playing really well without being rewarded, you know, early in this season, and kind of, you know, I mean, I think snake bitten is maybe not a strong enough word in some of these instances with how he's been getting robbed. But how have you seen him kind of plow through that? And do you feel like he's kind of on the cusp? And obviously he's seeing it go in the net a little bit now, but on the cusp of, you know, doing more.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's had a great outlook and demeanor despite not having, you know, statistical success early in the season. He stayed the program because he was getting tons of chances. He was getting 6 to 8 chances a night. They just weren't going in, and they weren't going in for his teammates that he was passing to. It just was kind of the way it was. And now it's kind of, you know, being a little bit more realistic with the math on, you know, 1 out of every 3 is going in or 1 out of every 4 is going in. And at some point during the season, if this keeps up, it's not going to be 1 out of 4. It's going to be 1 out of 1 and 2 out of 2 and 3 out of 3. And all of a sudden, you know, the wall will break down and, you know, he'll cash in. But the good part is he's been positive and working hard throughout, and it hasn't really affected him, you know, emotionally, because sometimes, you know, when a player like him goes in a dry spell, they can start to grip it and they start to become negative or selfish, and you know they're just pressing. It's what they think is best for the team is if they're successful, you know. So it's not selfish in that regard, but it hasn't happened with him. So you know he's been really strong in his outlook and his consistency with it. So, you know, it's nice to see him get rewarded a little bit. I'd love to see him get rewarded a lot.
Predators assistant coach Dan Hinote on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Dan, last thing for you here. Obviously, you know, good news that Ryan Johansson is on the trip, and it sounds like he's at least close. Number one, what would it mean for the group to get him back? And number two, do you think there's a chance we could see him soon, maybe later this week?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful. I don't know, you know, what his timetable looks like, unfortunately. But, I mean, we can't get him back soon enough. He's a huge part of our puzzle. And, you know, when you watch, you know, you miss a guy like him when he's out of the lineup, and he does so many things that you don't think of until he's not there. You know, whether it's face-offs or whether it's shutting down Barkov, you know, or freeing up Forsberg and Arvidsson to do their thing because he's so reliable as a centerman. And he logs big minutes, and he's a heavy player, and he's been working his tail off this year. This is the best I've seen him play, even though he, again, hasn't been rewarded, much like DeShane. He's been doing all the right things and maintaining the right attitude. So eventually it's going to pay off for him. But we recognize that, you know, as an organization, just how valuable he is and how much work he's put in this year. So we couldn't be more excited to get him back in the lineup because he's, like I said, a huge piece of our puzzle.
Predators assistant coach Dan Hinote has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Dan, appreciate you taking time to join us, and good luck starting tonight against Columbus.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Take care. Stay warm.
Absolutely. Hey, you as well. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Dan had to say there and some comments made yesterday by Matt DeShane as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tuning in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win our prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll have that opportunity for you at 8:45. The Predators taking on the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight. Game is at 6 o'clock. Pre-game here at 5 o'clock on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So make sure that you're tuned in for that. And thanks to Predators assistant coach Dan Hinote for joining us in the last segment. And Joe, some interesting stuff there, especially when it comes to the offensive zone. And we had Matt DeShane on yesterday for our weekly visit every Wednesday at 8:45. And he talked about, you know, the offensive zone and what he's seeing in that area right now and the creativity that he feels needs to be on display. Here's what Predators forward Matt Duchene had to say yesterday in our weekly visit with him.
We haven't scored enough, I mean, at all. We have a very talented team, but, you know, our offense has been the weak point. I think, like he said, I think our D-zone has been quite good this year. We gave up a lot last year at times, and we haven't done that this year.
Offensively, yeah. I mean, I think there's – I think the big thing is whenever you're struggling, it can be hard sometimes to, you know, have that confidence. And you need to have confidence to score and, you know, make plays. And I think right now sometimes we're a little too robotic in terms of, okay, this is where I need to be and this is what I got to do. You like the structure that's put in place by the coaching staff is definitely – an important thing, and everyone has to abide by that. But then within the structure, that's when you make plays and you use your skill and your creativity. And I think that's the part that's lacking a little bit. And I think just the decision-making at times isn't great. It's just from a lack of confidence, I think, or because of a lack of success as a group in the offensive zone. So I think for me, I just feel like we're a little too meat and potatoes right now. I'd like to see us, you know, use our talent a bit more. And I feel like we're almost playing with, you know, a hand behind our back a little bit at times. And, you know, if we kind of unleash that and start feeling good about ourselves again and using what we have, you know, the talent that we have, you know, I think we could get this thing straightened out. And I'm hoping to see that from the guys. I think, you know, something we've all talked about the last little bit. And I just want to see the boys loosen up a little bit and start to just, you know, trust their instincts and trust their reads and you know, let's go score. You know, that's got to be the mentality.
So, Joe, that was Matt Duchene yesterday in our weekly visit with him, brought to you by Two Rivers Ford and Gary Ashton Remax Advantage. And, you know, a couple of the terms that he threw out there were pretty interesting to me, talking about the lack of confidence in the offensive zone. You know, he mentioned the word, you know, robotic a couple of times, and, you know, it feels like, you know, the structure – you know, it's in place and they're not really doing anything outside of the structure to capitalize on the creativity that they have. And then you hear Dan Hynote in the last segment talk about, you know, the lack of confidence that it looks like they have, or I guess the lack of trust is the word that he used in the offensive zone. And that's what they're trying to correct with some new pieces coming in here. So, Joe, when you piece all that together, what stands out to you? What do you think it means for the Predators right now in the offensive zone with the struggles that they've had?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm not sure exactly, but it's funny because then when Dan was telling us kind of about what is structured and what isn't, and he used the term blank canvas, then I was like, maybe they should actually be more structured in the system. You know, I mean, whatever's not working, you know, do the other thing. So, you know, if you're not scoring, then, you know, have more that's, you know, that's predetermined. But I mean, easy for me to say, but it sounds like, you know, yeah, there's some sort of disconnect with some players and then maybe just individually, as Duchene said, some lacking confidence, but this is a very much a team game, very much a precision game. You know, the teams that have that great chemistry, you see it. And especially, I mean, as much as the Preds have played Tampa Bay this year, that's where you're like, wow, that's what high-level elite hockey looks like, really, in all phases, but especially just the way they move the puck, move their bodies, and seem to have, you know, an instinct for where everyone will be. The Preds don't look like they have that. So what? I don't have the answer to that, but it's easy to see that they don't have it right now.
It is, and I think Dan Hynote brings up a good point. When I mean, the newness of this is a factor. Like, you do have new pieces in here, and, you know, it takes some time. You haven't had a normal training camp to get used to the new system that you're running, the routes that you want to take, you know, the preferences that your line mates have. And Joe, part of that is, you know, they haven't been able to keep the same lines together for a very long time just based on the lack of success that they've had offensively. But some of that stuff does take some time to build up, but I still agree to a large degree with Matt Duchene when he talks about, you know, there needs to be more creativity on an individual basis in the system and in place of the structure. Like, having structures obviously important, and that's where you know, base the way you're running things offensively and what you're trying to get done out there. But so much of hockey is just reading and reacting to what's happening in front of you and trying to make a play one-on-one. And it's not like the Predators don't have skills and they don't have guys offensively that have proven in this league that they can do that and can make high-level plays one-on-one. And you're just not seeing that happen very often. Like, obviously, Philip Forsberg can do that, and Matt Duchene shown some ability to do that this year. But it's not happening consistently enough. And I do wonder if just, you know, kind of approaching the game with a mindset of, hey, you know, we're going to go out there, we're just going to make things happen, not abandoning the system, but playing with more creativity, letting your skill take over a little bit more in the system. That to me, if I'm John Hines, I'm preaching that moving forward. Like, my system's in place for a reason, and it's good to have structure. But a lot of hockey is just going out there and making a play. And I feel like the Predators, they've got to have that mindset more often than they've had it so far this season.
But see, so when I hear creativity, that to me is something that, like you said, not a ton of guys can do. Like Forsberg, of course, let him go and he'll do ridiculous stuff. But like that to me is different than what you said there about like to me, the simple play is not necessarily creativity. It's just make the simple play go at, I think sometimes they try to be too perfect with the puck.
I would agree.
But I mean, it's all, so I don't know. I guess I kind of look at those two things as a little bit different. Another thing that I thought was interesting from that interview with Dan was his assessment of Ryan Johansson. I have not heard that this year. He said he's playing the best hockey he's seen him play. Now, he hasn't seen a lot of him up close, but I thought that was interesting because I don't, that's not been my view of Johansson. But are we making too much of just the lack of offensive numbers?
Well, look, I don't think that Johansson's been awful or anything like that, but I don't agree with the assessment that he's playing the best hockey that we've seen him play. I mean, part of that is the production. Like, the production's got to be there. And I realize you can be doing the right things, and I think especially in the early part of this season, Johansson was doing a lot of the right things. We talked about it. I mean, plays he was making defensively, the numbers weren't coming, but he was playing pretty well. I thought that was starting to fade, you know, before his injury, and he wasn't quite as noticeable out there. So I found that interesting too. Like I said, I don't think Johansson has been, you know, bad or awful out there, but he's not been anywhere near as impactful as they need him to be. Now, having said that, you know, if you've watched this team play without him, there's a pretty noticeable difference with what they look like with him and what they look like without him. And I think, to Dan Hinote's point, you know, a part of Johansson's game and what makes him so valuable is the stuff maybe you don't realize he's really good at until he's gone. And right now, I mean, let's be honest, look at this lineup without him. There's a pretty gigantic hole in the lineup right now without Johansson in there.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, obviously, well before Dan Hinote was here, we saw, you know, Duchene go against Jonathan Toews at his best and flat out – or I'm sorry, I said Duchene, Johansson – and flat out win that battle. That's the standard, you know?
Right.
So, but it does sound like, at least from the perspective of, you know, last year to this year, the coaching staff happy with things he's doing in various aspects of the game. I mean, shoot, the Preds miss him on faceoffs right now, among other things. No one's disputing that he's a big loss and that they need him back. You know, this team is, to me, it's mediocre. Anyway, without him, it's less than that.
Well, and look, it's time for the practice stuff to translate over to the games. Like, we've heard John Hines talk about it. You heard Dan Hinote talk about it in the last segment about how, you know, they've addressed things offensively in practice, and they've made it a point of emphasis to try to build that trust that he was talking about maybe they haven't had so far this season. It's one thing to say that, and we've heard that at times this year about practice and the work that they've done. It's time for that to translate over to the game. And we haven't seen that anywhere near consistently enough this year.
Right. So be interesting tonight, you know, to see if this time off does anything for them. Probably nothing could do more for them than getting Johansson back. But, you know, what is this? I mean, you probably wanted to get out there as fast as possible after that last performance. But sometimes a little time to reset and things like that can be good for a team.
When we come back, we will get back into the NFL and look at the first round pick and the first round quarterback class. Trevor Lawrence, by all accounts, seems to be a sure thing in the NFL, but do we buy that? Is there a chance that maybe he doesn't work out as well as the experts think? We'll discuss it next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.